everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy College Football is back.
Canceled.
Whether or not that seemed like a good thing on Saturday, it was back, and we appear to be set to play again this weekend, and then again for more weekends after that. The NFL's
is that,
back.
Is that a threat?
it's a thinly veiled threat to play more football after what we saw on Saturday, which, to be honest, like, not the worst for three quarters. I mean, defensively, we can get into it. Like, it was, there are definite bright spots that are overshadowed by just a dreadful, dreadful fourth quarter. But yeah, like, I mean, I think we got some answers to some questions, and then just like so many more popped up, which is the nature of Syracuse football. No question goes unanswered without or goes answered without another, you know, five questions popping up in its place.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes. At least we're not a Big 12 football team.
Could be worse.
they suffered far worse fates than we did.
Three losses to Sun Belt teams.
Yeah, the three Sun Belt losses. So that's great for them. Including, I mean, Kansas just got like, you know, curb stomped by Coastal Carolina. That was great. Iowa State was ranked and then lost to UL Lafayette. But anyway, Syracuse lost 31-6. They could have easily been up 24-7 at one point. Instead, yep, they were not. And a 10-6 kind of deficit at the end of the third quarter quickly turned into a 31-6 loss. Andy and Steve talked a lot about this on the video feed. So while we'll touch on factors here and there, we're going to be focusing more on the Pitt game, which I feel like nobody's excited about, mostly because it's Pitt, but also because first week didn't go well. But Dan, I think to talk about like some of the things you mentioned, I think we got confirmation that the defensive backs are very good, that the 3-3-5 scheme works really well for what we have personnel wise. I think we learned that the defensive line is going to be just fine without the pass rushing losses. I think that's something that we had some confidence in, but I think most of it could have been like fueled by homerism. So I'm glad it wasn't. We knew the linebackers were going to struggle though a little bit, especially against the run. So I guess defensively, that's what I saw. What kind of stuck out to you on that side of the ball?
I think that's pretty much basically the same for me. I think if you had told me going into the week, hey, we're going to give up 31 points to UNC, I would have said, you know, not bad. Okay. UNC is a high scoring offense. They returned a really good quarterback, two really good receivers, two really good running backs, like at least like an okay offensive line. So overall, like, you know, I think you signed for that just generally based on what we thought UNC would be coming in. To hold them to 10 points and honestly, like, really beat them up through three quarters was really impressive. I liked everything I saw from the defense. The 21 points in the fourth quarter, it's not good. But if you just watched how the offense went, like, you kind of get how you get there. The offense couldn't stay on the field, did not get a third down. I think we had a pretty dreadful third down number.
It was 4 for 19.
Not good. And then UNC was 5 for 13. So we were doing the same thing to them through three quarters. Eventually, they kind of found the running game, and it was after our defense was on the field a lot. I the time of possession numbers, UNC had 32 minutes. We were at 27-50. Not as slanted as I would think, but I imagine in the fourth quarter, it was like, I mean, I can go tally how many plays they ran versus us. It had to be pretty ugly. So, I mean, that's just the name of the game. We've seen it so many times with past good defenses. Eventually you're going to give up points if you're on the field the whole time. Syracuse in the fourth quarter, our drives lasted, we basically had the ball right at the start of the fourth quarter. UNC scored a touchdown right at the end, like the first play of the fourth quarter. UNC scored on a Javonte Williams run. So then our drives, 3 plays, 3 yards, minute 28, 3 plays, 4 yards, 117, 3 plays, 7 yards, 145. 9 plays, 42 yards, 249. That's where Culpepper had a nice little drive going and then got picked off. So when you are going to have the ball for a grand total of, 9 plays, 18 plays, but half of them are on the last drive, and every other drive lasted less than 2 minutes, like, and you're going to allow a really talented, fast team to get the ball that much, like, you're going to give up some points eventually. It's unfortunate that it got all bunched up at the end, but overall, I think the defense was a real bright spot, and it sucks that it gets kind of buried if you just look at the box score and don't see, like, conceptually what happened. That being said, the offense is, like, just as bad as it looks based on the stats.
Maybe worse.
Maybe worse, and it goes back to the offensive line concerns that we had going into the year, and we thought might be kind of satiated between, like, everyone being healthy for once, which obviously is not the case anymore, and then, you know, maybe getting Chris Bleich to plug in at one of the guard spots. And then, you know, you go in, and Babers kind of had his, you know, kind of on the offensive today to defend Chris Elmore, saying that he was maybe our best offensive lineman, which speaks volumes. And I think the PFF numbers, which we've looked at, kind of back that up. I think he was the highest rated offensive lineman, so at least you have two different data points saying that. In any case, like, that's not a great thing when he's only been playing offensive line for a few weeks for the first time since eighth grade. Like, and kudos to him. He's probably one of the best players on our team, just, like, regardless of position, and he's done so much awesome stuff for this team in terms of just constantly changing his role without really, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any selfishness there at all. He just does it whenever it's asked. You need to have a former fullback not be your best offensive lineman. It's just, it's unfortunate, because, like, we thought that we had kind of figured things out with Vettorello and Cervase' roles, and I think Cervase played okay. Vettorello, I think, might have actually been the weak spot based on some things that, you know, basically just watching the game one time, and then some things we've heard from Steve, who's going through, and some other things I picked up online. So that's troubling. And then just the guard situation is troubling in general. So maybe it comes along, but UNC doesn't have, like, this stalwart defensive line. Pitts is much better. Even with some opt-outs, like, Pitts is one of the probably two or three best in the ACC. So this could get ugly on Saturday if we don't make any huge steps from week one to two.
Yeah, I mean, we really need to take some steps forward, obviously. Just to look at the Pro Football Focus stats. Interestingly, Darius Tisdale was the top-rated pass blocker with an 83.5. Elmore was second on the line with a 69.5. Then Service with a 61.7. Vet had a 54.7, which is not great. Matthew Bergeron actually only had a 52. I know Steve is kind of skeptical of some of these numbers, so maybe take them with a grain of salt here and there. On the run block, really nobody graded that well on the line. Bergeron's 59.9, Vet 59.9, Pat Davis 56.5, but that was in limited action. Service 55.3. And Elmore at 53.3. Tisdale was all the way down to 49.1. Again, take some of that with a grain of salt. But that's not good.
No, I mean, even if it's just, like, one person watching this game one time through, and obviously the PFF thing, they have a, you know, pretty crazy job trying to go through and grade all these games. It's a little less onerous now that there are fewer games. But in any case, like, it's one person's watching and grading, and, like, they're not gospel by any means. But that, I mean, that kind of bases out, like, what you saw. DeVito had no time to throw. Unfortunately, when he did have time to throw, like, he didn't have, it seems like, chemistry and timing is still an issue, and a lot of that probably goes back to the weird offseason we've had. This is probably the worst kind of offseason you could have, to have two coordinator changes, and I know offensively should be, like, the less crazy switch, because we're kind of within the same system. But to have all those coaching changes, and then to have, like, the players opting out of practice here and there, and you know, we fully support them in doing that, but it probably had an impact in terms of prepping for this game. So maybe the offense is just going to be a work in progress, which stinks, because we bring back our quarterback, a bunch of offensive linemen who did struggle last year, but you hope that they get better. A bunch of wide receivers who have played big roles for a couple of years now. You'd think the timing and stuff would be less of an issue, but it's clearly there's clearly something that needs to be done here that just hasn't quite clicked in yet.
Yeah, I mean, the DeVito to Harris connection still doesn't work, and that's incredibly just aggravating.
It's annoying, because, like, when it does and Harris hits the ball, he's, like, electric. It's just there's, like, two or three plays a game still where he's either running the wrong route, or DeVito's not reading his break or something. But, like, those two should be synced up by now. And last year was a constant issue, and we saw Harris get frustrated by it at times. This year, I mean, it still looked like last year, except that when Harris caught the ball, it was great. Like, Harris is awesome with the ball in his hands, and that's makes it even more frustrating.
I mean, Harris was heavily targeted in this one. He was super involved, really, in the entire game. I thought he actually did a decent job blocking. I felt like you know, he had that like sort of drop within inside the five where I felt like DeVito actually did deliver a bullet, you know, right over the middle. And DeVito, you know, really did struggle over the middle in this game. He has in general, but he especially did over the middle. In this one, he struggled to the boundary on both sides. Harris made things happen after the catch. I'll give him a ton of credit there. And actually think like he was tougher to bring down despite the bit of weight loss in the offseason than I remember him being. I always felt like he was a good run after catch guy, but was better on like just turning on the jets. And here he actually showed himself able to operate well in space. Some folks have brought out he should probably be more of a slot receiver, and that's probably some validity to that. I also felt like the Sherrod Johnson drop in the end zone was obviously killer. Like, so on the plus side, like that's where you defend DeVito. Like realistically, there's at least like five or six drops in there that you can
one touchdown.
At least one touchdown, maybe two.
A huge momentum killer. I know momentum's like a controversial thing to say in sports, but if there's momentum
game
in sports,
flow perspective though,
like I just think that the game factors. Very possibly plays out differently. Maybe UNC still wins, but like Syracuse needed a shot in the arm like that, and to drop that wide open touchdown, perfect throw by DeVito, right on the money, through his hands, just horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the drops. Like, let's say you conservatively give five, fine. So now you're looking at 18 for 31, and not factoring in that DeVito will also have more passing opportunities because there's more touchdowns. You're looking at maybe 18 for 31. Maybe he's throwing for closer to like 106, 170 yards. Still not an impressive total, but he maybe has a touchdown or two in there. I don't think it's like a game to brag about, but I think it's a much different game. Obviously, the points that people have brought up that I think are valid. Once DeVito's flushed out, he always goes right for one. He definitely is missing some guys downfield. He's not necessarily progressing well to his second and third reads. And that's definitely a problem. And he's definitely become a little risk averse. And this is something that I might get into in an article, but you know, he set the program record for most passes without an interception at this point with 201, breaking the old record of 190. But I'd also say that in this game, I don't think he put a single ball in play that looked dangerous. And it's not to say I want somebody, you know, pulling a Brett Favre kind of gunslinger act out there. But at the same time, I think that if you are a player who can be a P5 quarterback and be a potential NFL quarterback down the road, is maybe we like fooled ourselves into thinking early on in DeVito's career at Syracuse, like you need to be able to fit balls in tight windows. And I think he did here and there, but mostly like, there was no danger to these passes. And I think you saw kind of the danger leave his arsenal last year too, where once he threw like some picks and had some issues in the early part of the season, you really saw him like avoid trying to fit passes in tight windows and instead opted for the safe option. And that's how you get a streak like this, which great. But if we're not passing the ball effectively and aggressively downfield, then, you know, what is it really worth?
It's a good point. And also, like, last year, the picks that he had, the few that he had, were all those bunched in the beginning of the season, and they were all those, like, rollout, like, kind of bad hiccup, just bad habits that he had versus, like you said, trying to get the ball down the field, making a big play. Like, it's a lot easier to forgive, like, someone trying to make a big play, when especially when the team needs something like that, versus just, like, you know, being the proverbial game manager, totally afraid to like do anything that might be a little risky. So, you know, it seemed early on in his career like we might have a little more of a gunslinger in DeVito, and there are, you know, goods and bads with that. Like, obviously you don't want, you know, Tampa Bay Jameis Winston throwing 30 picks in a year, but also there's a reason why he also threw 30 touchdowns. Like, you do need to like get the ball downfield a little bit, and I think why you don't want him going off the rails, especially if the offensive line isn't going to allow plays to develop and the receivers are still not where we need them to be in terms of their chemistry with DeVito. Like, you do want to see a quarterback who is going to keep the defense honest deep and then force things back and force the safeties to stay on their heels and do all the things that like having a downfield passing game opens up for you, including opening up the running game a little bit, which obviously we did not have one semblance of on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of fit right in with what you and I were talking about in the game preview and in our position preview when we were alluding to at the time, Abdul Adams and Jarvion Howard not playing. But without those guys and their size, and with the interior line breakdowns that we saw, especially from the center position, this is kind of what happens. You have a very kind of fleet of foot, but also lighter back in Juwan Jordan, who's forced to run between the tackles and can't really do it. And it's not that he should be expected to either. Like, realistically, he's not that type of back. He's not the type of guy who, without somebody else kind of softening the line for him, he's going to be able to break through like that. And then Markenzie Pierre, like, just never really got rolling. And kind of my fears around, you know, his insertion in the offense, like, definitely came to fruition, where he's just, at least from what we saw in limited action on Saturday, he wasn't able to play the role that Howard or Adams would have. So that was definitely a disappointment. I don't see how, even with like the line that we thought we had and we still could have like before the end of the year, I'm not super hopeful that we're going to end up seeing much from the run game. And that means more blitzing. That means more onus on DeVito. That means DeVito more worried about what he's doing wrong instead of worried about what he's doing right. And I don't see it going well. But I also know that like Babers like has his moments where he's able to make these big shifts that we haven't seen before or change parts of the offense in drastic ways. And I think we could see a lot of that, hopefully, in response to this. But that also puts an onus on Sterling Gilbert, who I think called a terrible game for much of Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't look radically different from the frustrating games we had last year. Just like a lot of things that like clearly weren't working, and we kept on going for them, running up the middle with our two small running backs into an offensive line that wasn't working. It's just we're very afraid to abandon things that like are pretty standard parts of football that like clearly aren't working based on limitations that we have. And I just think we need to just figure something else out, because you can't waste full games, especially when we have a shortened schedule. You can't waste games trying to like force in like a thing that some teams can do that we clearly can't. And you would hope that would have become apparent during practice. Like, obviously, I think we were practicing full go. We weren't just doing thudding. And we have a pretty good defensive front, as we saw. So it should have been pretty apparent, I think, that we that before we were doing UNC prep, that like running through the middle is not going to be a thing that we're going to be super adept at. Honestly, I tweeted on Saturday, like, if you need to run up the middle, if we're like inside the five, or we were just dreadful, if I remember correctly on Saturday, like, stick Pat Davis in there and put Elmore in the backfield, because like doing it with Juwan Jordan, who had 14 carries, just isn't going to be what we need, considering the problem with the interior offensive line. So yeah, it's just frustrating to see the coaching staff not adapt on the fly and not make like those halftime adjustments that I think even the first couple of years we were struggling, I feel like we did better with that than we have the last year plus.
Yeah, there's been a decent amount of stubbornness, and obviously like not using the tight ends. And this one too was another frustrating aspect. Part of me thinks that like, okay, I guess like if we had lost 31-6 and it looked in doubt the entire time, I would have thought, okay, Dino's not going to empty like the playbook on this one. But realistically, like we had had a shot to be up 24-7, you know, shortly after halftime in this one, and just couldn't do it. So I'm hopeful that we see some changes here in week two. I would kind of bank on it. Cause if not, I feel like this coaching staff not really doing themselves any favors, not doing those of us who have faith in Dino any favors in terms of defending what's happening on the field. I'm cautiously optimistic that while Pitt's defense, and we'll get into this in the second half of the podcast, that while Pitt's defense is very good, I'm hoping that their lack of like a dynamic offense, at least on paper, means that we can stay in this one and maybe just take advantage of some mistakes.
Yeah, I think that's hope too. Like, and honestly, our offense can't really perform worse. So it's not like I don't think we're going to fall from where we were this past weekend. Like, we had 200 total yards. It's not going to get worse than that. So maybe we figure some things out on the tape. But Pitt's D, like, I don't think even if it's better than UNC's, we'll be able to have like a much better performance. And then their offense, I can't imagine. I mean, it's definitely not as talented as UNC's. Maybe it's, you know, efficient. I mean, it was Austin Peay, but I don't know how much you're supposed to take away from that. Like, teams beat FCS teams by 50 all the time. And people, we were talking about it before we hopped on the like live call. Like, people were acting like the shortened clock thing was like this crazy thing. Like, no, that happens almost every year in one of these FCS games. Like, that's not a crazy thing that never happens at college football. I think it happens literally at least once a year.
Oh yeah, and once a year maybe in each conference. We can get into Pitt after half. I think first the one other thing I wanted to talk about before we got to the break was. Syracuse added another commit today, and last week we had the live news that Enrique Cruz,
not a wide receiver,
I was going to commit to the Orange. This week we got well before the podcast, news that a wide receiver did commit to the Orange, Arade Gadsden, the second committed. He's the son of Arade Gadsden, who many in our general age bracket or older might remember for playing for the Dolphins, playing for some other teams in the NFL. He's our first Florida commit, surprisingly, in this this class. And Syracuse is still kind of hanging around the top 45-ish.
We're at 44 right now after Dadson, so.
Which is nice. Unfortunately, we also lost that under George Brooks. He named his top four. We were not in it. That's not great. But we also do have a pretty solid group of defensive linemen this year. So, Dan, I know you and I kind of talked about it beforehand. What are the handful of things left in this class that you think they need to address?
It should be interesting. Like, I think we're pretty well situated. We have a couple receivers, which is obviously a place where we looked at every year. We have a good amount of linebackers and defensive linemen, as you said. I'm all for adding another offensive lineman or two. Enrique Cruz is one of our best commits at the offensive tackle position, but with how our offensive line has been, I would just get as many good Power 5 level offensive linemen as you can, even on top of the like four I think we have committed now. And then I don't know, I think it's a pretty well built class so far. Like, you have your quarterback who we got early, finally. You have a good amount at the it's pretty well spread out, I think, in terms of position need.
Yeah, I think we did a really good job there.
Maybe at a running back, because like we have one in Josh Ho, but then we just lost Adams and Howard, who are apparently going to try their you know, gonna put their names in for the NFL draft, which I'm sure everyone has thoughts about. But in any case, like, we may be actually kind of short of that position now, as we've seen. So maybe you add another running back if you can.
Yeah, I mean, if we lose both of those and then you add in Garrison Johnson, that means three out of the program this offseason alone. One of them expected, and Adams, just because he was going to graduate. That's not ideal. I don't know who you get in on from the running back spot. There's not like a ton of guys that we've offered out there. There was, what's his name? Anthony Turner is still out there. A guy that we were in on early and then we kind of like faded. But 24/7 had him mark warmer for whatever that's worth. Offers from Virginia, Mizzou. 24/7 has him as a three-star guy. Is it? No, sorry, 24/7 is two-star guys. He's three-star in the composite. Had a bunch of good offers. Might be worth circling back with him.
That could work. I also, like, just leaving a couple spots for transfers. Obviously, who knows with what this year's going to look like in terms of how the alchemy works with these classes because of everyone, like, maintaining eligibility. It's going to be kind of a mess, whether or not it's a good thing or not. Like, in any case, it's going to be kind of a mess, so... if it's like the normal, we have this many spots left, I wouldn't be opposed to waiting and seeing what the transfer market looks like and saying like, hey, we have playing time available. We need to win some games in 2021. So get in here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think leaving some spots available would be good. Some other guys that are kind of out there still, we have linebacker. I'd like us to get at least one more linebacker. I think Eric Ford's the only one really on our radar anymore with an offer. Though he seems like he's a Virginia lean. Bryce Myers is a name that's come up a bunch. He's a New Jersey kid. Does not have an offer yet. I don't know if he's going to get one necessarily. I think linebacker, JUCOs, we should definitely be mining that area. We've had some success there. I just think even if the linebackers we currently have are good, I think we really need some help in the immediate term. So a transfer, JUCO, or I mean grad, even better. But usually grad transfer is a little bit tougher at the linebacker spot. Another option, if we're looking at guys who could still be added from the high school ranks, Gabe Blair, we probably offered him a couple months ago, Texas kid, but the type of guy who has a USC offer, Virginia Tech offer, Air Force, Colorado, Tulane, among others. He's a center, and realistically, as we've seen with our struggles at that position of late, having capable centers is a must. It also seems like we still have a couple balls in the air in terms of defensive backs. William Wells, a Florida kid, has a Wazoo offer, UCF, FAU. He's somebody who we talk to pretty frequently. And then Elijah Clark is a name that has been coming up lately. I know Mike McAllister tweeted over the weekend that it seems like SU is still pursuing him despite the fact that he's a Rutgers commit. Rutgers coaches are not too happy about it and want to flip Deuce Chestnut.
Really, really like super pedantic on like on Maine, basically, which like I know recruiting is what it is in 2020, but like, come on, guys.
Yeah, it's pretty silly. It seemed like a very like, high school drama, bit of tweeting going on. So, yeah, sure, whatever. Fight it out over kids that have their own decision making and free will.
What's also what's the sell there? Like, A, it's not like you only recruit one cornerback per group. Like, you can play four cornerbacks on the field at the same time if you want. It's not like there's, like, a real crunch for playing time at that position. But what's the sales pitch to Chestnut then? Like, hey, your school is recruiting this other guy that happens to play the same position. We want to get back at them, so come play here where we're also recruiting the other guy at that position. Like, well, it doesn't make any sense. Like,
also, all of our fans said that your offer was not committable.
Oh yeah, also that part. Yes.
but they're gonna act really thrilled when we flip you. This
borderline four star from Camden, we're definitely not gonna take him.
But, nonsense.
The non-commutable offer thing also, like I know it's like offers really aren't like real until the August before their senior year anyway, but the whole non-commutable offer thing is the stupidest thing in recruiting, and recruiting has a lot of stupid things.
Non-commutable offer thing's gotten so much worse.
It's just so dumb. Like, it's dumb as a full concept. Just, and I know there's no ways to fix it because offers are just like kind of fantasy for the most part until they actually happen. But like, it just, it's gross. It's gross, and it doesn't make any sense as a concept.
Yeah, I agree. Like, either you want a kid or you don't. So.
Yeah, offer them or don't. If you don't offer them, who cares? Like, that's fine. Like, you don't, no one's telling you have to offer a kid, but to like leave this like weird dangled like thing over someone's head. And to like what to make them feel better and be able to say they have an Alabama offer or whatever, even though it's not, like, it's just gross. Like, I don't know. You can't even do anything about it because it's just all fantasy world, and it's all just like in the text messages between coaches and players. But we just like really need to like come together as a community in general and just like say, we're just not having this anymore. It's so disgusting.
Yeah, I agree. And like, you know what, as much as it seems weird that like, Syracuse has more offers than most, like actually almost everybody out. But if you look at where the offers are coming from, like Syracuse isn't a school offering a ton of kids that like they're not going to take.
I also don't hear much about the uncommittable offers coming from us anyway.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm just saying, you look at us, like realistically, most of the offers that make up that huge offer sheet that we're putting out and like that we're offering hundreds of guys is we're offering a lot of guys who like we're probably not going to be able to get. But we want to be able to show interest in certain high schools, certain guys. Like, we want to get involved in these conversations with 4- and 5-star guys, even if the likelihood of us being able to bring them aboard is slim because it has future return value.
And there's value in, like, in just showing up on someone's list when they do, like, the early, here's who's offered me things. Like, you want to have your name involved there. And I guess, like, you could almost call the non-committal offer thing, like, the reverse for the player. But then, like, if that's not, and we've seen this multiple times, if that's not, really told the player up front, like we had the thing with Louisville a few years ago, I think it was, where the running back was like committed there, and then on like the eve of signing day or whatever, he basically was found out that he couldn't actually sign. So like, just really disgusting stuff like that. People just need to be more transparent. Like a good high school football player, like it's if his dream school doesn't offer him, I'm sure it'll hurt, but it's gonna be way worse if he thinks he can commit to Penn State and then Penn State's like, oh no, we didn't actually mean it. Like, it's just really, really dumb, and I would love to just get rid of that totally. cast it into the sun as like a concept in high school football recruiting, which has so many issues anyway, and bigger ones to be frank. But like, it's just bad. It's just bad. All nothing good is gained from it.
I would agree. Dan, before we head to some beer talk, did want to do a little bit of an ad read for our friends over at Homefield Apparel. You may be familiar with Homefield at this point. Those listening, it's incredibly comfortable vintage collegiate apparel. They just launched a Syracuse line back on September 5th. I know we talked a little bit about the shirts last week, but personally, I'm a big fan of the ones I got. The Otto Crest, as well as the Vita the Goat. That's super comfortable. Unfortunately, Vita the Goat lost on Saturday, so I'm going to give a different shirt a go this coming Saturday, probably the Otto, and we'll see kind of what happens next. Dan, have you received your shirts yet?
I just got back to New York like an hour before we started, so I haven't checked my mail yet. I think they were getting in today, if I remember, so I will have hopefully a full review by next week. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one who will ride a shirt until it doesn't work. So, and I think I ordered 5 from Homefield. So we're gonna have we have some real opportunities to find the juju here to see what works. I don't know what I'll start out with next week, but I'm sure I will excitedly let people know. But yes, I ordered 5. So we have over a month to find the shirt that's gonna win us some games.
Yeah, I have enough for a different one each game this season, so I might have to just play the variance card. Got a couple of jerseys to throw into the mix as well.
Yeah, I mean, if we go to like full Syracuse apparel, then yes, I have enough for like all of football season, and if I like go dig into the coffers somewhere, probably like half a basketball season.
Yeah,
whatever that looks like.
I do have. I did get a Script Mello jersey.
Nice.
Like, yeah, so let's see when I ever get to wear that again. But yeah, finishing up our ad read here. We told you about some of the shirts we like last week, this week. You can go check them out on Homefield. There's about 10 of them right now that you can give a try. I think they're awesome, affordable, relative to like how these kind of vintage shirts usually go for. So definitely worth a shot. You can go to homefieldapparel.com for more and use our promo code Noons for 10% off.
Yes, definitely don't forget the promo code. And obviously I think most people took advantage on that big new Saturday where we beat UConn, which was lovely. Hopefully we'll have another chance to go head to head with them and prove our t-shirt dominance once again, even though they do have the Sad Husky, which is it's a feather in their cap, but not enough, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they keep complaining about the fact that they weren't competing against us when they were doing it, but realistically, you either want the shirts or you don't.
Yeah, I mean, do you just not like UConn enough by itself, UConn fans? And also, like, if you want to throw in some Tulane or Hawaii gear or some of the other schools that San Diego State has a nice line, obviously start with your Syracuse, but I will be ordering some Tulane gear down the road. Once I've exhausted my Syracuse wear here, but no, there's no shame in ordering some non-rival stool stuff that has like awesome old like time capsule logos on it. So embrace the full collection, I think.
Indeed, I will. Again, for those who are ordering, go to homefieldapparel.com, and you can use the Noons promo code for 10% off. But now, Dan, we move on to beer. What have you been drinking of late?
I grabbed some Connecticut stuff while I was in my hometown for my birthday weekend to celebrate me becoming a very old 30-year-old.
Welcome to the club.
Which on Saturday, my actual birthday, comprised of me watching the Syracuse game and then working until about 11:30 p.m. So really fun, just great stuff. The two things I bought 4-packs of, which I almost finished yesterday in total, some passion fruit Doza from Two Rows, which is really delicious. I'm having the last one right now. And then I also got some G-Bot from New England, which is one of the better New England IPAs around. Super, super, super hopped out, but really good if you enjoy that. So for a double. So definitely liked having those. And then back to drinking through my ever-expanding beer fridge that never is quite down to where I can go buy more.
Yeah, that is the issue. Within a beer fridge. Also nice to hear you drinking some formerly known as Gandhi Bot.
Yes.
one of my favorite New England beers.
So good.
I haven't had it in years really, but always a good one. Couple new ones from me, all Highland Park. Had the Goody Pills from Highland Park and Creature Comforts down in Georgia. Really good collaborative pills they had. Also a Standing in the Sun from Highland Park. Really, really good West Coast IPA. Was, what was it? Oh, it was Strata Hops from Indie Hop Farms and Motika Hops from Freestyle Hops. Both really good. I felt like it was just a really nice, light, crisp West Coast IPA. Also had a Raised Eyebrows from Highland Park that I hadn't had in a couple of years. It was a sour ale with guava and passion fruit. So really enjoyable.
Sounds very refreshing.
Yeah, I last time I had it was probably like 2015, so it's been a while. But again, definitely enjoyable. Speaking of drinking, yeah, why don't we talk about what's going to happen to Syracuse against Pitt this weekend? Because I'm I feel like not a lot of people are super super positive about this. I think we have a chance, but we'll get into predictions later. First and foremost, what do you think of Kenny Pickett?
He's fine. I'm feeling like about Kenny Pickett like I felt about Kenny Pickett for. I mean, he definitely feels like
a quarterback.
He feels like a Pitt point guard at this point. He feels like the Carl Krauser of the Pitt football program. Like, I know he hasn't been there that long, but man, like, he's a senior and he's played every year. And man, it just feels like he's been around for so long. He of a career best 6.6 yards per attempt last year. Actually, not career best. He had 7.7 as a freshman when he didn't really play that much. But then 13 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, really lighting the world on fire. He just doesn't excite me at all. I think it feels like we're on the third year of people acting like he's this really flashy, exciting player when really he's kind of a game manager, which is fine if you have like the running backs that Pitt tends to have. That's the one thing that kind of stands out from this game. They ran for 147 yards and 6 touchdowns, which is great, but it's Austin Peay. But it was only 4.1 yards a carry, so it wasn't like they really imposed their will on the Austin Peay defensive line. They threw the ball all over the place on them, which, again, I don't think Kenny Pickett's throwing for 14 yards an attempt and only one touchdown somehow every game. But I guess like they spread the ball around well. It's just like it's tough to glean too much from a demon that's an FCS opponent, and one like it's not like Austin Peay is like North Dakota State, so. Good for them for getting the nice win and the headlines and whatnot, but I kind of feel like we're going in against like a pretty empty slate. And I think like if we had played Austin Peay, there's a decent chance we would have done maybe not quite as well given our offensive line problems, but like I bet we probably
well
pretty handily.
Yeah, I mean, we probably would have had a couple like pick sixes, some other stuff. That would have been fun. I'm looking at Pickett's numbers from last year. Just really weird games all around. And again, I've said this before, I couldn't tell you a single pass Kenny Pickett's ever thrown. And yet we have, he was a weird 21 of 41 for a touchdown and 2 picks against Virginia last year. He put up some solid numbers, 26, 37 for 321 against Ohio. He was an very odd, really a weird line all around. 35 of 51 for 372, 0 touchdowns and 0 picks in a 17-10 loss to Penn State last year.
He's like incredible at not throwing touchdown passes.
This is Time Lord nonsense. Like, how do you do this?
Like, I didn't watch this game because like there were
why would you
all the other games were on.
I didn't watch another game. To be honest, I've been and I wrote this on the blog last week because of my like iffy feelings about college football this year and just like not feeling ready for the season. I didn't watch a single like second of football after the Syracuse game because I was just disgusted by everything that happened.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't do that, but that's fair. That's a fair reaction to it. It's also not like it wasn't really like a good group of teams, and there won't be this week either. Like really, until the SEC comes around, like we're kind of wading through some mediocrity. But like, I didn't see this game, but it just feels like every single drive they must have just gotten within 5 yards and punched it in because it's entertaining. How often, even in his like better games, he throws for like one touchdown.
Yeah, it's just like I'm not going to go through the whole list, but like that game against Penn State was really him in a nutshell. Like almost 70% completion for almost 400 yards with zero touchdowns, zero picks, and you lose 17 to 10. How?
Yeah.
Like, how does all that happen?
It's fascinating for sure.
Yeah. He also had a 10 of 26 game for 103 yards against Virginia Tech, but no picks, no touchdowns in that one either. Had a 30 of 40 against BC, but they lose 26-19, 323 yards, zero touchdowns, one pick. Again, how?
It's really like he's ripped out of like the mid to late 2000s. Like he has like the exact same stat line as like Red Paulus, but like worse completion percentage, I think. Like it's just weird all around.
Yeah, I don't really understand what's happening here. And like it's fine. Whatever. Even in this game against Austin Peay, yeah, 14 to 20, 277, one touchdown. Get out of here. Like I really know. I don't think they're gonna have to run the ball in their running game, at least from like a proven entity perspective, is not great.
Pretty good. And so like,
but their best options all left, and last year's wasn't that good either.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like I think their reputation kind of comes ahead of like the reality of where they are. And again, like it's hard to really say like, oh, they only ran for whatever against Austin Peay, like 4.1 yards a carry, but like who knows what, like if they actually needed to run the ball effectively to like win a game, what it would look like. But yeah, it's just like there's nothing about this offense really scares me. The defense does. But even then, like they had three sacks since Austin Peay. It wasn't like they just like, you know, destroyed what I'm sure is an offensive line that's at least comparable to ours. maybe hopefully worse. They were pretty disruptive. Eight tackles for loss. Like it's not like Austin Peay really got much going. They basically didn't run the ball. They had 1 yard on 22 carries, which is kind of fun. But like I don't know. It's just I'm sure the defense is pretty good. Everyone said it was going to be good entering the year.
They're definitely good. I mean, they have great defensive backs. They have great guys up front. I think that's all fair. I didn't really see it against Austin Peay though.
Yeah, I mean, it's every year that like a lot of FCS teams have this exact same result, and it's hard to glean much from what like Pitt looks like just because they held Austin Peay to a yard on the ground. Like it's just not, I don't know. It just feels like there wasn't that much that happened last weekend, so people made a much bigger deal of this game than you like ever like anything ever happens before. It's like it's almost like that Maryland, and obviously Maryland went on to blow us out, so like that just looked exactly like that. In a bad universe, but it's like the Maryland Howard game last year where they won by like 80 points. Like, yeah, that's not going to be indicative of like what happens after this at all.
Yeah, and like I'm looking at like, I mean, obviously, again, didn't watch the game for you know just having a life reasons. But like nobody had more than three tackles, which is weird. Paris Ford didn't put up like big numbers necessarily. Had one tackle for loss. Like Hamlin didn't necessarily have a huge game either. Just all around, just kind of weird. It's kind of like shrugging at what happened here. So, like, I don't think Pitt's bad. I just also don't think it's indicative of what's like what a 20 plus point line against us right now. Like, I don't see how Pitt's going to put up 20 points against our defense unless like we put up 0 points. It just doesn't look like a rest. Like this looks like a 13-10 game.
It looks like a Pitt Syracuse game.
Well, almost any Pitt Syracuse game except that one.
Yes, except for the one interesting one.
The one interesting one that had everybody on the edge of their seats for like 4.5 hours.
Even when Syracuse is down like 3 scores, it didn't really feel like it because of how many points there were.
I started writing the recap, and then I was like, yeah, I mean, this is probably not going to happen. And then suddenly in the fourth quarter, everything got really stupid. And then I was like, hold on, nope, not going to write the recap yet. Never mind. And then luckily, life gave me another hour and a half to write the recap because that fourth quarter never ended.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I was at my in-laws' house and I was like packing things in. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to start writing this recap. And suddenly everything got really pointy and stupid. And then I just decided, yeah, I'm just going to wait for this one a little bit longer. And
was what was it, store? 76-61?
Yeah, everyone does. Just higher score than the Syracuse Pitt game was that year in basketball.
Oh God.
Just the things we do for this team. We don't have too much longer.
New crossover opponent. We just don't want this anymore.
We don't want this. They don't want this. But yeah, Dan, I guess anything else you want to share on Pitt here? Not because we don't have a lot to say about them. I just feel like we didn't really get much from the Austin Peay game. I feel like everyone should know that they have one of the top three defenses in the conference. They probably have the top front, even without Jalen Twyman. They probably have the top front in the ACC and maybe one of the top 5 to 10 nationally. This is a really good secondary as well. If Tommy makes mistakes, he's going to pay for him in this one. And I think they're going to be able to make us suffer on the ground. So realistically, Tommy's going to have to throw us out of this one if we want to win this game. I don't see that happening, but maybe Dino surprises us all and just decided to kind of like go bland in week one and then suddenly really start attacking Pitt and doing something interesting.
I'm going to hope that's not the case because we were down 10-6 in the fourth quarter. So
pull out some tricks.
We probably should have said like, oh, hey, let's try to win the game that we're in. So I'm going to go ahead and say that was not the case, but maybe we'll see. No, it's not the same. Like I expect Pitt. Like I think the line may be a little high, but it's hard to blame people considering what our offense looked like and what our defense. I mean, I think most people who actually like watch the game at all acknowledge it. Like, oh, the defense actually looked really good. But it's easy to see why, like, you know, your average person would just like glance at the box score and say like, oh, Syracuse stinks. Like top to bottom. That being said, like, so yeah, I just don't expect much from this Pitt offense, but the defense does scare me. Just because like, while there was nothing that like really jumps off the page about this Austin Peay game, aside from the fact they didn't run for anything, there was nothing to say that like Pitt's defense is worse than we thought. Like it still looks really good by default. So yeah, like just based on what we looked like offensively, I'm not like thrilled about it. I think we're really missing like our normal kind of like early easy game or two schedule. Because based on how week one went, like we really could have used a tune-up game and then maybe we would have been able to figure out our offense. Because like if we had won like an ugly game and it's Liberty or whoever we have to play, in week one and like kind of like last year where we didn't really do anything offensively but still won comfortably, maybe we would have like kind of snapped into like let's figure out what works mode before having to play like big conference games like this. So just another instance of our weird schedule really not helping us at all this year.
Yeah, no, not at all. And now looking at a Georgia Tech team that managed to knock off Florida State.
I think that might say more about Florida State, but yes, they do.
Yeah, I agree.
They do look, and even last year they looked better than like they probably should have. They weren't good. They only won like two or three games, but they looked more. They looked like nominally ahead of schedule. I think Jeff Collins is doing a really good job there. Florida State's a mess, just like a real mess.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, I agree with you. I don't think that we'll get into Georgia Tech. Well, somebody will get into Georgia Tech with you. It probably won't be me next week. But
probably gonna have Paul Johnson on. It's gonna be sweet.
Oh, that'll be great. You get like hating ass Paul Johnson.
I should actually send an email. I should find a way to reach out to him.
Dear Paul, I co-host a program that you can listen to with your ears.
Do we think Paul Johnson knows what a podcast is? I guess I think that's what you were kind of hinting at there.
No.
It's like, yeah, I'd lean, it's like 40, 60 at best.
It's a radio show, but for the internet. I wish we could get that guest. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting where Syracuse finishes. I don't think week one's indicative, as you would agree. Week two, on the other hand, I think is slightly indicative of where we could be going, even if it's not the indicative of where we are.
We need to show some real optimism. I guess like the one bright spot is even if we kind of lose the fans after week two, we're not gonna have any fans in the stands anyway, so ticket sales just not a concern.
Honestly, I kind of wanted to like be that guy and just like take a photo of the empty stadium at the beginning and go,
how do you expect to go to recruit?
UNC fans just can't even draw them in when they're great.
We won 10 games 2 years ago. No one's here, literally.
Yeah, I thought better of it.
I mean, we'd have to make the jokes anyway, acknowledging they were jokes, so it works out.
Yeah, it's fine. So Dan, what do you have going on in this Pitt game?
I'm going to say we find a way to score a touchdown. I'm going to give us that. I'm going to say Pitt 21-10.
All right. I actually think the offense fails to score a touchdown for a second straight game.
Oh, God.
However, Andre Sisko scores a touchdown.
I might just delete Twitter if that happens.
However, Andre Sisko scores a touchdown. I think we lose 17-13.
Okay. I don't think anyone's going to feel great about either of those. Like, you know, honestly, like, if our defense looks really good again and we don't score an offensive touchdown for two straight weeks and we lose by four, I don't think people are going to feel good about it, but, you know.
No, because there'll be some Schaefer-ass nonsense. And realistically, like, if I wanted to lose a game 17-13 to Pitt, I mean, again, I'm pro-Dino. I could have kept Scott Schaefer around for that effing result.
Yeah, to Schaefer to die you up a game where, like, his defense is going to be unstoppable once or twice a year, and maybe you find that with, like, the help of Andre Sisto picking off a pass every single game, which, by the way, just, like, incredible. Every time there's a ball kind of like a questionable pass over the middle, I Sisto like teleports to it.
he could have had another one on that what's it called? I forgot when it was. Was it in the second quarter? That like tip ball deep.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
No, he could have had another one.
I will say, and we probably should have brought this up earlier, the defensive backs, like, and we said they looked good, really like lived up. The corners as well. Melifonwu, I think.
Sisko got burnt like once, and that was really good.
And he's a gambler, so that happens. Not to like excuse it, but it happens. But Melifonwu, I feel like the announcers kind of like caught up to like where we are. And Melifonwu was like, yeah, he's really good, guys. And then
he's one of the best cover men in the conference.
Yeah, like they just stopped throwing at him. I thought Garrett Williams looked really solid. Obviously he gave us some passes, but he recorded a lot of tackles and just like kept things in front of him. So overall, like, if we can do that more often than not, just hopefully this offense gets to a point of like respectability and we can win a couple games this year. We just can't go another year without having like any improvement. Even like if there are excuses, it's just not going to fly after a while. So knock on wood. Like, the defense looks like a really impressive turnaround. The hire looks good. Like, I'm a big fan of the 3-3-5 and all the like adaptability of it. But like, Dino's an offensive coach, so I mean that's going to fall on him more than anything.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. I think it's realistic to start to wonder about what the hell we're doing here. If honestly, like, I'm only like half joking about the no offensive touchdown thing, but I think it's within the realm of possibility because of how good Pitt's defense is. But if we can get a special teams or defensive touchdown, that could be a nice way to balance it out. Still, I don't think this fan base can survive a second straight week of no offensive touchdown. And
it got ugly on Saturday.
Super ugly.
So I'm not looking forward to that part of it at all.
No. Although I will say realistically, we were like two drops away from having two offensive touchdowns and a stupid personal foul from having a third touchdown in general.
That was so bad. It's unbelievable, A, how many mistakes North Carolina made to keep us in the game. Yeah. Or to like keep us like hanging around, and also how many mistakes we made to not answer those UNC mistakes with touchdowns, like
repeatedly
in 20. It sucks to have to keep on saying like if this was 2018, but if 2018, we probably win that game by like 30 points. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah, and immediately vault into like the top 15.
Yeah. Oh, and this year, yeah, we'd be like as soon as they'll race the Big Ten and Pac 12 teams, I think is this week. Even though,
yeah, they did.
Yeah,
I mean, like, Lafayette's like the 19th team in the country right now.
Yeah, we'd be probably in like the top 12. So, cool. and again, like it won't even take that much to even get there now. If we just beat Pitt and then beat Georgia Tech, like we'll probably be top 25 by default. So,
win us!
Yay! I can't wait! I can't wait for us to like for that to happen and us to like really pimp it like it's a normal ranking.
We should. I will.
True.
SU can and should sell T-shirts.
Oh, that's not a question. They will.
Rank 2 out of 3 years. No, 3 out of 3. That would have been 3.
We're ranked last year. Yeah. 3 straight years. 3 straight years in the rankings, baby.
3 years.
It's a dynasty. The dynasty's back.
Just pull the Scott Schaefer. 3-0, 3 years.
The era of good feelings.
24 years.
Oh, God. Yeah, that feels like a good place. Yeah, place to leave things.
Yeah, this was nonsense. Anything else, Dan?
No. Good luck this week with everything that may or may not happen.
Yeah, we might have. I think there's a very fair chance child number two arrives soon.
Yes. So in that case, it'll probably be, as you predicted this past week, it'll probably happen during the Pitt game.
Yeah, it didn't happen during UNC. Pitt sounds about right. But like, we'll actually like beat Pitt, but I won't be able to watch the second half because the hospital won't have ACC network. Because I know they don't. I know they don't because I know from last time when I got to watch the Syracuse Clemson game on ESPN.
If that happens and like we're like struggling at the half and then you rush to the hospital and then we win,
well, I'm not allowed to watch.
You're not allowed to watch again, because like I feel like if we poll our fans, they're probably gonna say no, you can't.
Well, I think our fans would prefer that I have no joy anyway. But
that's fair.
Anyway. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and go Orange.
Orange.